there's different subtleties and nuances, but women in general are taught to play small, even though they're corporate executives.
They notice that, why does the CEO go to the EA for advice? He should be reaching out to me. And they start to notice that because I invited them in for conversation or to my community.
Where does that lack of self-love come from?
When we haven't received enough love from our parents, never been seen and respected when we're children.
I never understood that those things could come from childhood, but it's really crazy if you don't spend the time to have some awareness around who you are and the journey you've taken and the experiences that you've had throughout this life and how they can still trigger and show up as an adult. And it's mind-blowing to see it once you actually understand what to look for.
They play too small. They don't believe in themselves. They don't declare what they truly want.
It's women that are working in the corporate world that you're primarily targeting and teaching them how to not play small.
Exactly. Healing emotional wounds, childhood wounds.
Are you a psychologist by profession, by trade, or is this all just lived experience?
Lived experience and always been interested in psychology.
Got it.
If you're new here, welcome. I'm excited that you joined us. Every single week, I get to sit down with CEOs, leaders, founders, builders who are doing something really fantastic on the planet. They're building a business that's making a difference in other people's lives. And I get the opportunity to sit down and chat with them and learn how they're doing it. The lessons, the failures, the opportunities, and they're going to leave you and me every single week with some nugget, many nuggets actually, that you can integrate, implement into your business to do the same thing. So I'm glad you're here. Sit back, let's get into it.
If you build a business out of a life-changing personal experience, how can you position it so that businesses, corporations can take it seriously? That's what we're going to examine today on the Brand Lab. Because emotional intelligence, that's our topic for today, it sounds really powerful on paper, but do all companies take it seriously? Do they buy the word powerful, or do they just buy performance, ROI, KPIs? They're looking for metrics that move the needle, right? So the real question is, can emotional intelligence be positioned as a measurable leadership advantage, or is it currently packaged as personal healing? Well, that's what we're going to decide today on the show. Today, I am joined by Camilla Kalberg. She works in emotional intelligence and leadership development, primarily working with women leaders in human resources who are navigating high-pressure corporate environments. And her journey into this space came through a major personal rupture. She had a very high-conflict divorce that forced a complete identity rebuild. And now she's teaching women leaders how to regulate their emotions and lead with authenticity. It's an overused word, but I love how she has positioned it. Today, we're going to examine the commercial side of that. What does she actually sell? Who's buying it? And is her positioning sharp enough to scale? And then we're going to hear a little bit about her personal story. So let's start off the show. So welcome to the show. It's good to have you here, Camilla.
Thank you, Diego. I'm grateful to be here.
And you are, just so everyone knows, you're calling in on the podcast from where?
From Denmark, Copenhagen, Denmark.
So it's amazing to me. We have people, this is the beauty of podcasting. We get people from all over the world on this show. Just in the last few episodes, we've had Germany. What was the last one? Italy. And then we had another one from Sweden. So we've had a lot of Europeans in the last six or seven shows. It's really crazy. So welcome to the Brand Laboratory. I'm glad to have you here.
Thank you. I'm excited.
So what do you do? What do you sell? Let's just jump right into it. What are you selling?
Okay. What do I sell? I sell transformation. And I don't really say I sell, but I guide women, mostly women, but also men, to live a higher life. With more inner peace, experiencing a life full out, having more meaning in life. And that is the transformation I contribute to.
So you got into this work because you had sort of your own, I'm not going to say tragic, but sort of an emotional inflection in your own life that sort of inspired you to step into this space. Want to tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So everything I do is lived experiences. So someone say it's about, I've studied science-based, well, it is, but it's certainly also my life. So my background is I come from corporate, BPCL, IBM. I know all the external world, how to run big transformations. But inside, I felt empty. And now I know that when you feel not enough when you compare yourself to others, that's also the people you're going to attract. And I ended up in a relationship which now is a double blessing, because having I ended up in that relationship, I would never have helped women heal their emotional baggage. But I ended up in a toxic relationship, and I've been kind of labeled and acknowledged, I would say, as psychological abuse, and ended up in court. So you get to learn that new way of living. And I was not emotional intelligent when I started all this inner work 7 years ago, but certainly I have become very quick at resetting my nervous system. And that's what I help women leaders do, because it's not something we are taught in school.
You said you get used to that new way of living. You mean the hypervigilance around trying to survive? What did you mean by that?
Yeah, a new way of living is that suddenly your life is about going to court. And I was the language here, because there was a manipulation. And suddenly my ex-partner, my then husband, couldn't see how aggressive he was. So suddenly it was living together. And suddenly I had to prove, how do you show up in court proving your emotional scars? But that was suddenly my new normal. And I had to learn to navigate this. I was like, I don't want to share everything on the show, but when you have been psychologically abused, there is a lot of scars that you get to heal. But I also suddenly, I call it in bed with the enemy, with that movie. It's like suddenly I had to navigate a life where there's so many accusations that I'm not a good mom, that get to take my daughter away from me. My daughter was six. And suddenly I just had to navigate a very new life and a dimension of being a mom and an ex-partner. And I had a big responsibility, and I still have, because I have my daughter. So I get to heal my daughter. That's what this new way of that new life was all about. And I had to learn to deal with outer chaos so I could heal myself and I could heal my daughter.
So tell me, what's the through line through all of that experience? What's the through line that was so powerful enough for you that it triggered you to start a whole new profession? What was it specifically?
I love that question. The true line was, I was in court. I had a nervous breakdown. It's very uncomfortable to sit across your then partner and tell everyone about some very personal emotional wounds. Ended up discussing emotional intelligence and energy with judges. They told me that if I do not heal, my daughter would not heal. And in that moment, my ears get, this is so profound, said, I have a very important mission to help other people teach, educate, train what energy is. And if we do not show up as our highest self, then that way of showing up and being emotional vulnerable and consuming other people's emotion will also impact our children.
So can I back up for a second? So yeah. Up until this point, had you had any experience with this idea of energy work, energy healing, emotional intelligence, this sort of stuff? Yeah, you said yes, you had.
Yeah. So I started my coaching, first in divorce coaching, when all this happened. So I've been coaching for quite a while, but not to the level of consciousness, not to the level of emotional intelligence, until I ended up in court, because it was also about going from surviving to thriving in court. So I was also elevating my own life at the same time I was helping women transitioning through divorce. But going out of court with all my people around me, professional team, is that how resilient I am. I don't consider myself a resilient, but apparently I am. That was the what you call the line in the sand, say what I have and what I can is just something I had to learn without really reflecting on it. But I do master something that I didn't learn in IBM. I didn't learn BP. I didn't learn anything else. But that life experience taught me something I apparently have become. I don't know. I can never become a master, but I learned it through lived experience.
So sorry, I'm just still trying to get some clarity on this. So you were
Okay.
already a divorce coach as you were going through your own divorce.
Yeah.
That's an interesting disposition. So, and I don't mean that lightly. How do you, I'm interested, how do you view your divorce being a divorce coach and having a bunch of experience with that sort of thing on a recurring basis, dealing with other people's stressors? How do you manage that yourself and not see the bigger calling that came from that experience?
That I didn't see or did see.
So sorry if I misheard you.
No, okay.
The chronology that I heard you say was you were a divorce coach, then you went through a catastrophic 4-year divorce of your own, and it wasn't until you went through this 4-year divorce that you realized that you were destined for a bigger calling, not just divorce coaching, emotional intelligence combined into the divorce coaching, but teaching women how to sort of navigate that. That was the chronology I heard. Is that correct?
Yeah, so there's so many other things I could add.
Sure, but is that sort of a fair high level?
Yes, as well as then add that to it that I've been 20 years in corporate and I've been struggling with leaders who showed up as being more vocal, more toxic. So that was my first calling. I want to help because at that point in time, I worked with lead coaches already. I had mentors on my professional team before I went through divorce. So that was the first calling. And then helping, what happens is that when you share really vulnerably and openly to your clients where what you're going through, you also attract more people who are struggling silently. And then in court, that was the emotional intelligence calling that
Okay.
appeared.
Well, this is the Brand Lab. So if you don't mind, I want to go into the lab here for a minute with you because I'm still a little bit confused on what you actually do as a profession. So, because I heard a couple of different things. So, at the end of the day, what's the primary problem you are solving for your client? What's the primary problem you're solving?
That they play too small,
Play
that
too small.
they don't believe in themselves. They don't declare what they truly want
And
out
these
of
are
fear.
specifically women, men working in the corporation.
Yeah, so primarily women. Men are also part of my clientele, but it's primarily women I help.
But it's women that are working in the corporate world that you're primarily targeting and teaching them how to not play small.
Exactly. Healing
Okay.
emotional wounds, childhood wounds.
So you're doing a lot of neuroscience and psychology work with these people. Okay. Understood. And are you a psychologist by profession, by trade, or is this all just lived experience?
Lived experience and
Okay.
always been interested in psychology.
Got it. You and I are very similar in that regard. I'm not a psychologist or a therapist, but I work with people at very similar crossovers in some of the things that we do. So I appreciate your position. Okay. So you work primarily with women. Women who are navigating the corporate workspace, and then you're working it's so you're really doing like mindset re-engineering type of work.
An identity.
Mindset, identity. I use the word identity and mindset. That's why it's interesting the crossover we have. So, okay, cool. And so in that space of this mindset, identity, re-engineering, you're teaching people how to, you said, live not live so not play so small, be more emotionally intelligent so they can navigate. So what exactly does that mean, not playing small? Can you extrapolate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I would love to because that in my space is so important. Many women, also men, but let me just double down on women. Many women have been taught just show up, be nice, but only ask questions when you know the answers. And I serve women in C-suite. And when we been told to be nice and help, that has become part of our DNA, our belief system. And so
epigenetics
is it is. So they struggle when they are in room with a toxic leader or a leader or CEO who wants to lead, who wants to be right. Then they end up what I call being a doer rather than actually be and become an advisor. And they don't understand why. They start to blame the outer world, why this is happening. But what happens, you know, that then nothing will change unless you change. So
understood,
they reach
yeah.
out for help. And then I take them back. How was it when you were four? What happened with your relationship with your mom or your dad? And then we start to heal that and they see patterns. And then they dare to show up more boldly and say, I am enough. I can ask some questions. Hang on. Let me just tell you what you need to know. So they go from not asking powerful questions to actually allowing themselves to be enough to be in the room. Oftentimes they ask, why should I even be in that room? I don't have anything to share. You do, but you get to own it.
The irony of this, and I face this all the time as well, is that these are, on paper, these are powerful individuals. They're C-suite executives who have made their way through the food chain, if you will, in the corporate world, right? But yet they're still having suffrage around psychological issues that they haven't necessarily unpacked since their childhood, their lived experiences, all the way up to their adult life they're now living. Do you find this to be a common element among corporate executive women in general, or is this very specific women that you're targeting that are suffering from this? Let me stop there. So answer that first question.
I see it as a, well, the world is big, right? But it sees as a common thread. There's different, there's nuances. I saw also clients from US, East Coast, West Coast, Northern Europe, Southern Europe. There's different nuances. But we are still underlining, or the baseline is that we've been taught to be nice.
We being women. So you're saying this is a common thread among women across the globe. There's different subtleties and nuances, but women in general are taught to play small, even though they're corporate executives.
Yeah.
Then so they're not playing that small if they're corporate executives.
No, they're very good because they have small, they have worked a lot, right? They've worked their way up to where they are. But now maybe they come. So my clients are primarily in the mid-50s. What else is that to life? They've been headhunted. They've done so many amazing things. But they also know that they trade in hours for money. And they want more time. They want to still, they report to CEO, then C-suite. But they don't really break through. They want to break through. They want to solve bigger results, solve bigger problems. They notice that, why does the CEO go to the EA for advice? Why doesn't he reach out to me? He should be reaching out to me. And they start to notice that because I invited them in for a conversation or to my community, and they start to become more aware. But they're still amazing women, right? They are doing really well, but they just feel that they could do even more without.
Is this a product of the system? Or a product of their own engineering?
That is a, I was about to say, it's a product of the a system. I would say it's a product of the social construct, but it's also a product of, because obviously there's so many women, right? So I only attract those who struggle with this, but it's a problem or a problem from also childhood.
So it's a little bit of both.
It's a little bit of both. Where we played small, where we were not, we need to heal our relationship with our moms, where I didn't feel seen. My clients didn't feel seen. Maybe they were abandoned by their moms, or they had different or challenging relationship with their dad. So always proving, do you love me? So it always from childhood, yeah.
So I don't know if this is an American or Western lexicon, the glass ceiling. This is what we're referring to, right? Oh, is that correct? Okay, so
Yeah, relate to that.
the glass ceiling is international for women. So what I've heard you say so far, if I just may recap, so you're dealing with women, high performing women, high functioning women who are driven, motivated, hardworking. They have navigated their way through the corporate infrastructure by grinding it out, by being talented. But at some point they hit a ceiling, the metaphorical glass ceiling, and you're helping them navigate through that because one of the things you've seen is not only is the system against them, but they themselves and their inner engineering are working against them. And so you're helping them sort of where those two collide, navigate through that with emotional intelligence. Did I get that
That's a
right?
good sorry.
Okay. Is there a common theme with the women that you're working with? I've heard you say a few things: childhood wounds, trauma, belief systems, experience. All these things obviously layer on top of each other and sort of become this congruent anomaly that they may or may not be aware of, right? But in your experience, is there a common theme that you see more often than not? And it does it center around beliefs? What is it?
There's a few common themes that show up. One is that, am I good enough? That's a self-love, self-respect. And this week I've had a couple of discovery calls. And
Come back to the mic. You're going echoey.
sorry, they're okay.
Yeah.
So discovery calls and
That's why I use this over the head one, so I don't have to worry about that.
the theme was, I realized I was a high paid piece in this game, and they are so disappointed about the restructure, and they asked this very powerful question: what is it that I really want? So they realize that they may have been, and I think we all have been to some extent, been serving other people's goals rather than actually serving their own goals and desires.
So self-love, and then rather than focusing on their own motivations and their own desires, they're trying to fulfill other people's needs before their own.
Exactly. It was my own journey as well. I've been a high flyer, but then suddenly, what about me? What is that I truly want? Yeah. So they've
Why are you positioned to do this better than, say, a psychologist or a therapist or somebody who specifically focuses on this sort of cognition or whatnot?
why I am skilled to do this.
Yeah.
I help people from my own lived experiences. So I have had many people, professionals on my team. So I heal my own childhoods wounds. I have stopped climbing the wrong wall to allowing myself to find what I truly want, and I understand the gap and the uncomfortableness to be in the unknown and suddenly say, what is it that I know to be true? What is that I want to serve? And certainly also about emotional intelligence. Feel the sensation in your body, connect with your thoughts, and then flip it in the moment. Yeah, to live a greater life.
So your lived experience and going through the corporation, and it sounds like you experienced the glass ceiling yourself. Is that a fair assessment?
I don't think I experienced the glass ceiling because I chose to exit BP before I hit that glass
Got it.
ceiling.
Got it.
But I have experienced a lot of either having people in my team being more vocal or reporting to people who are more vocal and toxic. That got me to play small out of fear of not being liked, out of fear of if I say that, will I get fired? Even being threatened, if you say that, I can fire you right away. I mean, how do you deal with or how do you navigate such environments? I've certainly been in such situations, yeah.
So your experience model for helping these women comes from your own experience with your trauma around your divorce and all that experience that you went through, sort of the connection between that and how you navigate life, and then helping other people facilitate their own glass ceiling in the corporation. And so you've taken those two and you've built this model to help other people that are sort of navigating similar types of experiences. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I understand it now. Sorry, that took me a little bit to just kind of like bring it all together. Is there anything in what you're doing? Is there anything in terms of how you're positioning yourself with your brand and your business that feels harder than it should be?
So that's a good question. Say that again, if there's
So
anything.
as you try to grow your brand, as you try to grow your business, as much as I love talking about the rabbit hole of psychology, this is a branding call, so I want to sort of get back to that in a minute. And I bring it full circle, don't worry. Is there anything in your business as you try to grow your brand and position yourself to attract the right type of audience, the right type of customer? Is there anything that feels harder for you than it should?
I love that question. Nothing feels harder. I think I don't want to. I don't want to be in my head, so I want to flow from heart. What has been really challenging for me is to really speak power to truth, and because of everything that I have experienced, a new court case has just come up, right? So we're in volume two. So owning not I do own my story. But giving myself the power to share also my story, what I know to be true, and go out publicly and share it with not worrying what the then people will say. That has been, I had to do some work around that to attract also the people who are ready to heal their family traumas or divorce traumas and still take their career to the next level. So that's been really work I had to do.
Is the source code for that struggle, is that based on imposter syndrome or your own sense of shame around your story or some sense of invalidation around your experience? Like where does what's the source code around that?
I love that question. The source code is fear. Fear, what if I start to speak power to truth? Like, I'm so glad, and it sounds maybe like you're so counter. Why should you be glad? But not long ago, I after 5 years, 6 years, I suddenly got from court psychological abuse. For me, it was such a relief because you have to prove your emotional scars. That takes a lot of time. But for me, fear around when I go out, what would he do? How could he sabotage my career? How would he sabotage whatever I
He
want to
being
do?
your husband, sorry. Is that
My
correct?
then husband. Yeah. So that was the fear I had to overcome. But where's the fear,
So
right?
we're talking about latent fear from previous experiences that is still showing up in your existing model.
Yeah, but I had to overcome that because he now opens a court case number two, right? So that is still an ongoing situation. So that was a fear that I had to, but it's my calling to help other people or
Wait, I
women
need to take a
who.
timeout on that. Sorry, we're going to come back to this question. So your ex-husband, you went through 4 years of a divorce court scenario with your, and now he's bringing stuff back up again.
Yeah, he opened another one. He can do that until my daughter is 18. So
Wow.
another 7 years.
Is this for financial reasons, I'm assuming, or is there something else at stake?
No, he has enough money. No, I think he just wants to win.
Oh, he just, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So he's one of those type of men. Interesting. He's one of those type of men that is causing the problems for the type of women you're helping. That's ironic.
Yeah. But now
Interesting.
I understand the other side as well, right? I start to really understand hurt people, and I understand, get to see the soul behind the title and everything that he does. So he gives me an amazing exercise to continue elevating.
Yeah, know your enemies, keep your enemies close. There's no better way to understand how that side w operates than to, be in the trenches with them. So I want to go back to this you and your fear and your imposter syndrome or whatever it is, the suffrage around telling your story. H have you given any thought to, and it sounds like you're working on it, that's what I hear you saying, but have you given any thought to sort of simplify your message around at the end of the day? What's the number one thing that you're actually solving for the most important type of person you want to work for? And then putting yourself in their shoes by looking at what it is they're actually suffering from, so that you are more empowered to speak to that solution rather than coming at it from your own lived experience.
Yeah. So what I'm doing, that's a good question. So what I'm doing right now is I'm getting hyper focused on that one problem. So you get by sharing your own story, emotional intelligence, limiting beliefs, but I'm honing in on playing small, not giving yourself or declare what you really want in life. So I'm narrowing down or going down that rabbit hole one inch wide and one. Yeah. That's what I've That is what is landing for me these days. That is the hyper specific problem I want to help solve.
So do you find, and I'm just curious,
Yeah.
this is probably not a blanket statement, but do you find when you're working with these women that you sort of have a default mode that you fall back into?
Tell me more. What's that default mode?
Well, you have your own lived experiences. Your
Yeah.
lived experiences have been the catalyzing agent that have put you into this position that you're doing now for your profession. And
Correct.
so a lot of the work you're doing is based upon your own lived experiences, both in the corporation and in your trauma with your divorce. And then you have sort of synthesized that to develop a rubric to help other people. So I'm wondering, in the process of working with your own rubric, do you have a tendency to default to sort of like one modality of helping people?
I don't think if we talk about modality, is that coaching? Is it mentoring? I have many modalities because I have had like also taking a training in coaching. So I do mentoring. I do peer to peer. I do advisory. So I'm not I go away from coaching just like ICF because then there's only one way to do coaching.
Yeah, hold on, let me stop you there because I don't want to go
Okay.
down that. That's not the question I'm asking. Let me try to re-explain it. So
Okay.
I have noticed in my own business that I have a worldview. My worldview is based upon my own experiences, my own philosophies, my own beliefs, my own values. And when I encounter situations where I feel like I can be of the most help, I have to be very careful to remain neutral around my position, so that when I'm providing advice, I'm or counsel or reflection, as I say it, it's a reflection, right? I can remain objective and not biased based upon my own experiences. So in your work, and you're working with women that are sort of reflecting some of the same things that you've gone through, how do you remain objectively clear and unbiased, and not defaulting to sort of the triggers that caused you your own chaos and your own pain and your own trauma when you're helping them? Does that make more sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think because I've worked with some very successful mentors and coaches, I've had that training to really be so present in the room that I cannot think about my past, and I'm very objective because I'm in that room to serve and set other people up for success.
Yeah.
So
Well,
that's I couldn't do if what I did if I would carry my own luggage, my own story into that client conversation.
how have you resolved that within your own self?
So what I do, or maybe I don't know, but what I do is that I become so present that I listen to what other people are saying and what they're not saying, and I'm simply just reflect back what I hear them say. But that comes by training. I cannot think about my own stuff when I'm so present with other people, when I coach, when I help them. I cannot, and if I would ever advise, I would never give a piece of advice or like based on my own experience. That would be very wrong if I did that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
no, I we're I think we're still not on the same page here.
Okay.
So it would be imp you're human. It would be impossible for you not to carry the experiences that you have had, the trauma-based experiences, into your own teaching, into your own coaching, if you hadn't done the work on yourself first and foremost. Agreed?
Yeah, because it's lived experience I build on.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, well, not just a lived experience, but if you haven't taken the time to unpack your own trauma based upon your own experiences, then your worldview is going to be based upon those traumas and those experiences, unless you've taken the time to identify them and do the work on yourself so that you can unpack how it's making you relate to the world. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm asking you, what work did you do on yourself so that your worldview wasn't tarnished by your own experiences? Did you do therapy? Is this all self-taught? Like, what was it that you did to become a better version of yourself so that you could then be more fully, more present, more whole for the people you're serving?
Oh, that's a good question. So before I even started into coaching, I had my own company being advisor. So I've been working with professional, very successful mentors, coaches, business entrepreneurs for the last 10 years. And they helped me grow, hold the mirror. And I still work with mentors, entrepreneurs,
mm-hmm.
to expand my business and become a better version of myself.
Got it.
Yeah.
And
I
therapy?
Wouldn't have never have been able to do what I do if I had not elevated myself. I've invested, I would say, quite a lot of money in myself.
For sure.
Yeah.
Clinical therapy as well.
Oh, we have as well, also because of court and for my, yeah. So I have a lot of people on my professional team. Yeah.
No. Have you yourself gone through clinical therapy for your own patterns, your own behaviors, so that you can sort of unpack that, is what I'm asking.
Yeah.
Interesting. How much clinical perspective goes into the work you're doing with the women you're working with? Or is it more experiential?
No. Also, some of the say exercises or insights that I got from clinical experience, especially when it gets to goes around healing a toxic breakup, because some of my clients have also been in a relationship with some people call it narcissist, I call it like a burnt child, which really it really is. So I share what for me. And some of these exercises, which are used in clinical therapy, is like, what if this could work for you as well? So what I have learned and the gift from that clinical therapy, I also share with clients who are interested in that.
You said one of the common denominators that you see in a lot of the women that you're working with centers around this idea of self-love. When you unpack this idea of self-love, and I have a lot of experience with that on my side, so I'm curious to see if there's a common denominator between men and women in this regard, and clinically and experientially. When you work with women who are suffering from self-love and have the inability to sort of navigate this because of this very heavy burden, what's the source code for that? Predominantly, where does that lack of self-love come from, originate in most of the women you're working from? Do you see a pattern?
Yeah, that's deep. So the source code, I just get to sit with this because a few clients showed up. I mean, the source code for lack of self-love comes from not having received enough love from the moms.
From the mothers. Interesting.
Yeah. So they have to, there's something you can see in my eyes, this is really deep. So when we haven't received enough love from our parents, then we are longing for love and never being seen and respected when we're children.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting. And this is something I had to learn the hard way. I got into this work similar to you. I got into this work because I kept sort of finding myself in these trauma loops. And this was a term that I was unfamiliar with, but I kept finding myself in these trauma loops of recurring patterns. And I'm really good at pattern recognition, but apparently I wasn't that good because I could never step back outside of myself and see my own patterns, right? And often we cannot, right? It requires somebody else to sort of reflect that back for us most of the time until we have sort of an impetus for it, right? But it's interesting to me, the more I started to unpack my trauma, I come from a very large family. I'm one of 12 siblings. I came from a very abusive background. My mother was unable to provide love because she wasn't allowed to provide love. My father was highly abusive. And I never understood sort of this. Are you familiar with attachment theories and things of this nature? Yeah. So I never really understood that my persistent need for whether it was validation or words of affirmation or how I was showing up in relationships or how I was responding to triggers that triggered me. I never understood that those things could come from childhood. But it's really crazy if you don't spend the time to have some awareness around who you are and the journey you've taken and the experiences that you've had throughout this life and how they can still trigger and show up as an adult. And it's mind-blowing to sort of see it once you actually understand what to look for.
Ooh, my body's responding now. Yeah, exactly. So even though I mentioned that, but these women I serve are so successful. They are. They have worked a hard. They worked so hard to get there. But if they have suffered when they were four, seven, then those patterns, that paradigms of what Proctor would say, is still part of who they are. And now it's time to let those paradigms go and heal that inner child who's never got the love from the mother, and deal with that and heal and let it go out of the body so they can really return to who they truly are.
So when you're working, and this is my last question, sorry. When you're working with these clients, and everyone's different, I understand that, right? So you're sort of meeting people where they are, right? And dealing with this chronic self-criticism or this people-pleasing, this hyper-independence that we've talked about, or in my case, it was attraction to emotionally unavailable people. I found throughout most of my life that I kept fi finding these fixer-uppers in my romantic partners, right? It was like, and I never understood that it was just me reflecting back to that person, whatever it is, so difficult to receiving, all these different things, overachievement, underachievement. There's all sorts of different ways that this manifests itself, right? Emotional dysregulation. We talked about that a little bit. Do you have a very specific rubric or sort of a program that you take your clients through in order to first identify all this? Sort of we have this inflection. Right. So then there's this identification, and then there's this assessment, and then there's this like, how do we now deal with that? And then how do we re-engineer and express that? Do you have a program that you take everybody through?
Yes, I have. My program consists of three steps. First, I call it identity. I can't remember what I call it, but identity, influence, and inspire. We cannot, because people say, how do I get the CEO to listen more to me? Well, first we have to understand who you're being. So it's about your identity. We work on your limiting beliefs. That's step one. Then, how do you want to inspire? That's about letting the nice girl out of your system and really ask those bold questions. What do they need to know? So practice stepping into that transformative leader, stepping into that bold leader you really, really want, rather than just say, yes, okay, we do that. And then it's influence, inspire, and innovate. And when we then know how to influence, then we can inspire also other people to elevate. To because it took me a long time, dear. I don't know how you, what you experienced with that, but showing up with integrity and authenticity. For most of my life in my career, 20 years in corporate, I never showed up as being me because I thought it was too vulnerable. But allowing yourself to be vulnerable and authentic, then actually you get more people to follow you, and we want as leaders people to follow us. And also, then we can really ask, what is that we truly want, rather than just going on the how, but really focus on the why and the what. So that are the three steps, and then that's what they know already about strategy. But the in identity, innovate, and influence. Yeah.
There are so many things and so many different directions we could have taken this call. So I really appreciate, first of all, thank you for being here. If people want to connect with you and you work internationally, but you're primarily located in Denmark, but if people wanted to connect with you, what's the best way to find you?
go on LinkedIn, for example, Camilla Kalberg, very active there, or my website, camillakalberg.com. And we also have some free resources on YouTube, Camilla Kalberg. If you're in transition, looking for a new job, wanting to grow your identity, there's different resources as well. So reach out. Love to help you.
Camilla, I appreciate you coming on. This was a really cool show. I will, there's just so many different things that I wanted to touch on, but the number one through line that I picked up from all of this, if I may, was there's always sort of an opportunity for you to reclaim whatever it is that you're missing, right? And when you have that opportunity and you have that awareness, finding somebody like yourself to be able to serve as a reflection for these individuals who are looking for something bigger, whether it's emotional intelligence or pushing through the glass ceiling, it's really important to know that you have opportunities and options and not just to sort of like walk away from it and frustration. So thank you for doing the work that you do. I really appreciate it. And thank you for coming on the lab today.
Thanks for having this amazing conversation. I appreciate it.
All right, that's it for today, folks. Thank you. If this episode hit you, like it, subscribe it, leave a review. It helps a lot more than you think, and it helps the right people find this show and help us keep growing so we can continue to produce amazing episodes. You can find me at thebrandstoryteller.com if you're interested in connecting with me. And everything else about this episode, the guest, the websites, the social media handles, they are all linked below. I'll see you in the next show.